Man, this fucking setup is a disaster waiting to happen. Christ, I was gonna use my fucking fancy microphone to make this sound better, but I cannot be fucking bothered. Because I'm trying to juggle a fucking DV cam and the microphone and my MP3 player, and it's raining, so I got this umbrella that has way too short of a handle, so I can't prop it under my arm. It's a pain in the ass, what I'm trying to say. Pain in my fucking dick. So it's kind of nice right now because it's end of June-ish, and it's 9 o'clock at night, and it's still pretty damn bright out, which is a neat aspect of Canada. We got some long-ass days in the summer. We got a summer that is so brutal. In, like, August, the famous story Brad's got is that he had a roommate from Uganda. I don't know if you heard of that place, but they be wicked black down there. And in July or so, he's like, ah, this is nice, this is like home. And by August, he's like, fuck! What the fuck is going on around here? See, that stereotype of Canada being cold? It's goddamn true. But when it is warm, it's way too warm. It way overdoes it. You know, the tilting of the axis of the earth and what have you. Anyway, I can't hold all these things at once, so sound quality is going to be a little worse on this one. Ooh, sirens. That brings me back. Back to New York. Except that one's an ambulance. I got to get off this street. This is Union Street, the north side of Fredericton. It's basically the one and only busy street on the north side. But it is fucking busy. It's actually harder to cross this street than any street in New York, and it's only a fucking two-lane street. It's kicking the balls. Man, I didn't have a chance to charge my batteries before this either. So, this whole thing could come to a grinding halt at any moment. But let me tell you what's up. I'm going to Montreal in about a week. And I'm going to be there for about a week. God damn, even this microphone I brought now, it's fucking poking out of my back pocket. Hold on, let me find something to do with this. Oh. Alright, I got the microphone in the pouch of my hoodie. I'm off that main street so I can stop yelling. Unless I feel the need to yell! In which case, I will. I was listening back to some old ham radios, and man, I miss my old camera. Where I could just walk around like this. I didn't need external microphones and shit. And it sounded pretty good. See, I complain a lot about sound quality, and other people are like, well, that I don't notice, but trust me, if I plugged in my mic right now, you'd be able to tell. Well, like, that show I did with Matt a couple shows back, I started just talking into my camera, then we get to his car, and I plug in the mic, and it's like, bam, it's like the fucking scales fall from your eyes. Anyway, I'm going to Montreal next week, speaking of Matt, because he's there. Gonna go hang out with him for a few days, and then lovely Ian from New York is taking some vacation days and also flying down. So I'm going to be there for about a week. And it should be fun. And I'm going to be totally off the fucking internet grid. So what I'm going to do now is just try to fill up my Libsyn account with a big ass fucking show. Way more just music. More talk. Sorry. More rock. Less talk. Just going through my big-ass slush file of songs that I was going to play, or maybe play some songs I've already played before. Just to fill up shit. This was actually the origin of ham radio. It's how I did the very first episode. It was when I first moved back from Vancouver, back here to my hometown. I wanted to fill my Libsyn account up. Just fucking cram that shit. Just fucking cram a gigantic show into that bitch while I moved home and sorted things out. So I ended up just sitting around drinking rum and playing songs. And here we are, 80-some episodes later, and I'm still doing it. So, let me go through my stuff, find a song to play. Alright, let's start with some Saul Williams. This was a little ways back when Mr. Barack Obama got elected. Saul Williams sent a thing out to his message board, mailing list, whatever the fuck, where he had this thing. It was one of these long poems from one of his poetry books that some orchestra somewhere did music to accompany, and He had some samples from it. And then you could buy the whole thing for like $6 or $7. And I really love Saul Williams. I like him a lot, but I just wasn't into it. I just wasn't. If I had a job, I'd give him the $7. But I mean, I just don't. I'm sorry, I don't have a job. If you have any kind of income coming in, it makes a big difference. You can find a way to stretch it. I have zero. None. Now, granted, I'm still somehow figuring out how to make trips to Montreal. But that involves hostels, and when I am staying in a hotel, it's a one-star, man. A one-star hotel. What does that even mean? I mean, I'll let you know. I'll have a recorder. I'll report from the field. But come on, times are tough. Not really. I mean, I chose by my own volition not to have a job for this past year and a half. Maybe times are tough. I don't know. I told you, I didn't even try to get a job. But the point is, I don't have one. One-star hotel. No money for Saul. But along with that, he sent along this song for free. And I liked it better. But it was free. So, you know. Anyway, it's called The Government. Saul Williams. It's pretty cool.
We don't need no good reason for the function of our meeting here tonight. Call the law, call it treason. We're beyond realms of believing wrong or right. So I don't know what you voted for. So I don't know, but I know one thing that's for sure. I got this book I've been reading, got me thinking 'tis the season of the song. Hey, 'cause we're the government. Oh, oh. We're the law. 'Cause we're the government. Declaratives and deny the official. Based in the landmark of the G-spot, we have overtaken ourselves and overthrown our forefathers. Let there be light within the light, and an answer to the name of darkness. We are forever risen from the deadly, the antivirus and the all-stars, granted power by forces unbeknownst to us. Made in the likeness of kindness, we offer anger to the angry and fear to the fearful. We dance at our own funerals to forsake the mourners. This is no time to cry. This is no time at all. Here is the moment of the overlooked and the unforeseeable. We are the elected officials of the people, poets and artists. We are the declarative statement of the inarticulate, the irreparably damaged goods of the bad, meaning good. We are the government. We are the government. We are the government. Let's be the government. Let's be the government. Yes, we are. Let's be the government. We're the law. Let's be the government. Yes, we are.
Internal revenue,
external revenue,
external revenue.
Now tell me, Reverend, who should we be praying to inside of me and
inside
you?
Inside of me and
now,
you.
Now does that ring is true?
Ooh.
Or should I look up, up, up and away? Now is it true to say?
Is it true to say
that right here today?
Right here today.
Oh, we can change our way.
Change our way.
Oh, we can change our way. Cause we're the government. We're the law. We're the government. Yes, we are. Yes, we are. Hey, we're the government. We're the law. With the government.
I'm walking past Neil's farm, the farm that's across the street from my old elementary school. And it's windy, it's rainy, it's been gloomy all day. But man, this is just nice. It's just, it's good to move away from wherever you live, because man, I got so much more appreciation for this place than I used to have. I don't really feel like I'm back, maybe that helps. I feel like this is a vacation as well. And then going to Montreal is a vacation within my vacation. The first time I moved to Vancouver, once I got that sorted out, that seemed like a weird vacation too. I think maybe that's the trick. When your life's going okay, it feels like a vacation. Being in New York, I mean, I didn't even have a job and it felt like a job. It was weird. My mom mentioned, oh, I'm surprised you're not, you know, tired of this place yet. I was talking about, I walked down to where Brad used to live. It's not that far, really. As a kid, I thought it was kind of far, but we were there the other day, checking out his old house. And I walked back down that way and a little further, and it's just like woods, crazy deep woods all over. So I got back and I was like talking to my mom, like, man, that's so nuts. You just go down to Barker's Point, motherfucking trees everywhere. It's crazy. She was like, hey, I'm surprised you're not tired of that yet. It's like, come on, please. In the winter, we'll see. But, I mentioned to Brad, I'm going to Montreal, you know. He's like, ah, now you can learn to hate the French, or whatever, you'll find something to hate. I don't know, I mean, maybe I'm not reading myself right, maybe everyone else is reading me better, but do I really hate that much? Come on. I just hated New York. Although, I remember by the end of my first tour of duty in Vancouver, I hated it also. Strange to say, considering all the love I fucking ladle onto it lovingly. But I definitely remember one night in particular, when it was all rainy, because it was always rainy there and dark in the winter, talking to my ex, and just lamenting things, hating the city, wanting to go back home. And eventually I did, but I was under this weird mindset that that I couldn't go home. Going home would be a failure. Then finally I just fucking did, and it was fine. That's one piece of advice I've heard, is like, once you're done with a city, you know, once it's fucking chewed you up, stay 8 more months. I don't know, because that's essentially what I did in Vancouver that first time, and I don't think it was to my benefit. Maybe I should have left sooner. Whatever. Anyway. Here's a song by Liam Lynch. It's called The Critics Are Smarter. I just got it off his website. That's right, I forgot. This dude's got all kinds of like little TV shows he does I've been meaning to catch up on. I just haven't, because it's fucking summertime. I ain't got time to sit around fucking watching TV. That's why my little comic strips have totally died off. I got better things to do, bitches. I got Montreal's to go to, for instance. Here's Liam Lynch, Critics Are Smarter.
Stronger. The critics are smarter.
shit, I'm down one battery already. I have no idea what kind of charge is in my other batteries, but I got three more to go. And my umbrella just did that flipping backward, you know, inside out, like a cartoon type of thing. And this microphone is definitely getting wet. Just can't keep it out of the rain. I never should have brought the fucking thing. I'm not even using it, for Christ's sake. Dang it. I guess I do complain a lot, right? Hey, I just got finished watching Monster House again. Because Dan's daughter Allie is down with us for the weekend. Because unfortunately, Dan's dad, who has been looking after Allie, has got cancer and has had some complications and is in the hospital. So that's not very cool, but... So we have Allie here this weekend, we've been hanging out with her. And Monster House is this movie that Ian introduced me to, actually, for a kid's movie. I was like, shit, that's fucking pretty good. So we watched it again today with her. She's like 5 years old, she was mildly scared by some parts, but she toughed it out. And at the end, I found out that fucking movie was written by Rob Schraub and Dan Harmon, the guys that used to do Scud the Disposable Assassin and La Cosa Nostroid and all that shit, Drywall. I don't know, that's just fucking cool. I knew he'd pretty much moved away from comics and was working in TV. Does the Sarah Silverman show and stuff. But, yeah, I had no idea he wrote that. That's cool. Here's a cool song that's pretty obscure. I've been fucking dragging this one along with me for ages, from computer to computer to computer, for fucking a long time. Actually, my big-ass MP3 folder right now. Something fucked up on this portable drive I've got. I'm really running out of space in general. All these big-ass video projects I'm working on. Fuck. God damn it. Ah, my fucking headphones are coming out and I can't hold all this shit at once. I need an extra hand. Hold on. What the fuck is going on here? All right. Yeah, this portable drive I've got, it's all getting corrupt and things aren't working. You try to copy off files and then they just fucking freeze. Hopefully nothing important got lost, but my MP3s are all goofed up. So I'm thinking I just fucking wipe the whole thing and just start over, because whatever. If I really want to hear something, I can just go download it. And it's starting to pile up with stuff that I just kind of intended to listen to and I'm probably never going to get around to. But then there's shit like this. I don't know where I'd find this song again, so I'm glad I kept it all these years. So I'll have to go through and prune, cherry pick stuff like this that I think is important to keep. This is the Mini Bosses. They're the first band I ever heard of to do covers of Nintendo songs. There's quite a few bands like this now, but these ones I heard of through Penny Arcade. And this is actually an original song they did. It's got singing and everything. It's called Song Capstan or something. I have no fucking idea what that means. Short little song, pretty basic, but very fucking solid. Mini Bosses right here, Ham Radio. I'm walking through the suburbs of Devon, just kind of heading to just houses of kids that I used to know in elementary school, if I can still find them. I know a couple of them are coming up here. I used to never care for this. Part of it is just absorbing what your parents think about stuff. But, yeah, I mean, I still, to this day, I like more organic kind of neighborhoods. I like older houses. I don't like the suburbs so much. I don't like vinyl finishes. But I'm walking through this right now, and it's actually really fucking nice up here. I mean, it's become a lot more apparent to me that my neck of the woods is full of fucking, not full of, but it's got its share of drunks and fucking doped up idiots. And, I don't know, it's just a little bit run down in general. Up here, this is the hyper-conformist. This is like this fucking opening to Edward Scissorhands type of shit. But, I don't know, man, there's a certain niceness to this. I don't know if I'd fit in here all the time, but I think I do appreciate it a little more. It's weird, the idea that people my age, I mean, I'm 29. I got nothing. I got shit and dick. But, you know, people my age have got careers and houses. And what really shocks me is since I've started getting into video game journalism, for whatever reason, way more than I'm into video games, it's just fascinating to me. Like, all these people that used to work for EGM, that was their job. Now they've kind of freelanced out to different places. Guys like Robert Ashley and, I don't know, Luke Smith and Anthony Gallegos, Shane Bettenhausen, you know, like Crispin, all these dudes, just, that was their job, you know, they did that, they had real jobs, playing video games and shit, holy fuck, you know, like they achieved something fun, something that I would be proud of if I had achieved it. Yep, there they are, that's my friend David's house, and my friend Amanda's house, right next to each other. I say friend, but I haven't seen them in for fucking ever, although last time I saw David, maybe it was 10 years ago, but, you know, we had a little chat. Last time I saw Amanda, I don't think we did. Although David, definitely, he did the transformation into the ball cap wearing frat boy. Which is another thing about my little hometown. I mean, I don't know, it's weird. It's like, in a lot of ways, I have just adapted to the style also. I got the ball cap. I did have the scruffy beard, but I've traded it in for the giant chops. Got the big-ass sideburns instead. But, I don't know. And part of it, I don't know, it's hard to tell how much a person is just a product of their environment, how much they fucking assimilate. I'm not really sure what I was talking about. Here's a song by Korn that I used to like a lot back in the day. This song is called Proud, from back in the days when I really liked Korn. This was on like a I Know What You Did Last Summer soundtrack or something. It was in some horrible fucking ridiculous place. So it's one of those songs that it doesn't... It's a little too old to really work on me like it used to. But I used to love this song back in the 90s. Man, is it any wonder that once that band got fat and rich, they stopped being good? I mean, how the fuck can you pull off a song like that when you're fucking rich, you know? That was one thing with Korn that was always obvious, is that probably the whole fucking lot of them, judging by Head's solo album, but definitely John Davis, the singer at least, was clearly a fucked up dude. Had a lot of fucking unresolved issues. And this was prior to the emo explosion, you know? I don't have any real problem with people yelling about their problems, acknowledging problems, even if they're just wallowing in them and they never seem to get fixed. As long as it's not just that super pitying. There's some pity going on here, but not the emo pitying. I'm just walking through this little path that, man, I haven't been here in for fucking ever. For a long time, man. 15 years, easy. Just this little path from this, connects this one suburb to the other suburb. And this is where my cousin Dan used to live. And the memories that came back to me right here are Heroes Quest, the old Sierra game, which they had to change the name to Quest for Glory because Milton Bradley had the rights to the name Hero Quest for a board game, which I also had and played and loved, and who my cousin Michael, who I was talking to last week for the first time in a decade, he still got all that shit. He still got all the expansion packs and stuff, but I'm talking about Quest for Glory 1, Heroes Quest 1, the computer game. My cousin Dan had this computer with, like, a four-color monitor, and he was, he's always been a grinder in video games. He got himself as close to perfect as you can get in Heroes Quest. There's some stuff like sneaking and shit that I just don't think you could ever do. But, yeah, I don't know. Just brought back that memory. You remember that, Keith? No one else listening knows what the fuck you're talking about, but you know, when you listen back, you'll be like, oh, right, I remember that. And up here is the apartment complex where my friend Jerry lived. Jerry was just one of those kids that always seemed to be lying about things. Lying. Just random weird lies. And generally, I just don't call people on that shit at all. They want to tell me some weird story that may be a half-truth, I don't care. I don't necessarily believe that it's true. I don't necessarily assume that it's a lie. I just kind of don't care that much, you know? I just say, okay, sure. Just sort of take it at face value. But when Jerry told me that he had a fucking 100 game cartridge for the Nintendo, 100 games on one cartridge, anyone in the right mind would understand that that was insane bullshit. I may have only been in the sixth grade, but I was like, okay, listen, man, that's enough out of you. That's enough of your bullshit. You do not have that. That's not possible. You can't put 100 games in one cartridge. And it turns out I was wrong. In fact, you can put 255 games on one cartridge, which I also later played. Now, these aren't good games. These are the first year or two worth of Nintendo games, because the Famicom, the Nintendo Family Computer, came out in Japan in like 83. We didn't get it till 85. So they had a couple of years worth of real shitty, almost Atari-grade games that we never got. And these things are small enough that you can cram a shit ton of them on a cartridge. You would turn the thing on, it would show 20 games, you turn it off, turn it back on, or hit reset or whatever, it would show you 20 more, then 20 more, then 20 more. Excuse me. Pretty much the only one that was worth a damn was by the guy who later did Prince of Persia. It was this really simple little fighting game, but it had really fluid animation. And besides that, I'm sure there were a few other things that were fun. Nothing that's jumping right out at me. Anyway, Jerry got the last fucking laugh on that one. Took me over to his house, we played it. I apologized profusely and asked him if I could borrow it, which I could not, because this thing was like fucking gold. I don't know how he even got it. But, bit of a neighborhood Nintendo legend because of that. Thank you. Oh, and now as I'm getting closer to Dan's house, I'm just thinking of when the Super Nintendo first came out. I remember I managed to work some deal with one of Dan's friends. We lent them our Sega Genesis, and they lent us their Super Nintendo. And I think the only game that we had was Super Mario World, but really, what else do you fucking need? To this day, I mean, I managed to get all the pieces to a Super Nintendo at thrift stores out in Vancouver, except for the power adapter. Because it's this fucked up, stupid adapter that doesn't work with anything else. You can use the same AV cords as on the N64. You could use the RF cable if you have to, I think. But if you don't have this one fucking power adapter, and I could never find it anywhere, I should just hop on eBay. I'm sure it's on there now. But at the time, I didn't have that kind of ability. I didn't have PayPal money. I couldn't do anything like that. And the only games I had were Flashback, which was better on the Genesis anyway, but... And Mario World. Just wanted to play Mario World. I've already played Mario World a shit ton of times on Super Nintendo. When emulators got big, I played through it on that. I even bought it again for Game Boy Advance and still loved it. It's fucking amazing. I used to always wonder, which one is truly better, Mario World or Mario 3? And I always had a hard time, and I'd sort of lean toward 3. But in my ripe old age, no, no, no. It's Mario World, Super Mario Bros. 4. It is the best. The best one. It's so fucking good. That's all I want to play. Anyway, there's the memory of that. That's this memory. There's Dan's old house. I'm gonna go walk around behind it into the woods. Let me find a song. Alright, here's a song that I've played at least twice already. But that is really fucking good, so I'm gonna play it again. And in fact, if I ever get my shit together to get fucking Kirsten and Clover recorded as a podcast, it's a short story I'm working on. This is going to be the theme music also, so you'll be hearing it even more. This is Wes Borland's short-lived project, Black Light Burns, and this song is called Cruel Melody, and it is motherfucking wonderful. Your heart is empty. Here's another song I've played before, but I like it enough that I think it deserves another play. The number of times I've listened to it in real life. Fuck, hold on, mosquito. Oh, I just walked through some woods. Tons of mosquitoes in there. But the number of times I've listened to this in real life are not well represented by the, I think, only one time I ever played it on the show. This is the Gym Class Heroes, who longtime listeners have heard me lament many times how I really liked this one album they had and then didn't like the new direction they took. But it's been long enough and it's clear enough that they're never going back that I'm less disappointed now, and mostly I just find it weird. Just like, huh, weird what happened to the Gym Class Heroes, huh? But yeah, each album kept having diminishing returns, where it went from me liking pretty much every song to only liking like 4 songs, and then this time around, only 1 song. And this is it, it's called Live a Little. But right before I play that, just a little random thing I wanted to mention. This morning, I was out with me, Dan, Allie, and my mom. Went to the Owl's Nest, the big bookstore, got some books with Allie, got some breakfast and stuff. And, I don't know, I just noticed the difference of when something happens, you know, that makes Allie start crying. I can't remember what it was today, she just got wet or something, because it was raining. And, I don't know, I guess you could make an argument that you shouldn't baby a kid too much, maybe, I guess, I don't know, but when Dan's around, I just defer to him, because he is the dad. Back when I was the babysitter, you know, just give her a hug, wait it out, whatever. But man, my mom is right with the, stop that crying, stop that right now, or we're going home, you know, it's like, really? And I mean, it just makes her cry more, I don't know, fucking, doesn't take long to just get her laughing again if you just roll with it. And I was like, man, that's weird. Was she that way with me and my brother, too? I mean, I know my dad is, like, somewhat non-affectionate. But I can only assume she was. It's like, And then you start wondering, like, I wonder how this... Fucking mosquitoes, Christ. I wonder how this affects my intimacy issues, you know, nowadays. I don't know, see, I'm getting where it's... I got this hoodie on, and it's so humid out that it's getting hot, but I can't take it off because it's got all my gear in it. But I got my arms, sleeves pulled up, so I can cool down a little, but now fucking mosquitoes are biting my arms. Because fucking Canada's so wonderful, right? Woo, thank God I'm home. But, yeah, I don't know, I think about times like, man, I don't know, I was out with Ian this one time. On the anniversary of her dad's death or his birthday, I'm afraid I don't recall anyway. And, yeah, I don't know. It turned into a big fight because I was not being supportive enough when I just felt frankly uncomfortable, you know? I thought Ian was pushing on me too hard. Fuck you, mosquito. Holy, get the fuck off me. This is ridiculous. Anyway, I don't know. So then you wonder, how much of that did I get from my mom, my dad? Who knows? I don't know. Who knows? Just idle thoughts. Who can say? Interesting, anyway. I don't even know where the fuck I'm going right now. Okay, I think I recognize that. The sealed Marysville power plant. I'm just walking down some weird back road. It's still pretty light out. It's going to be dark soon, though. All right, Live a Little. Gym Class Heroes.
Can you feel the urgency? Like a needle pulling out. Can you feel the urgency? Doses of anxiety. We're just faces in the crowd. Doses of anxiety. Oh, are these the lies that we've been taught to believe? Are these the lies that we have opted to leave?
are these the lives that we have opted to lead? Oh. And they whisper that I've lost the race, but I won't fucking stop. I hold you by my side. You know I need you here tonight. Because if we're gonna lose this thing, we're going out in style. Staring at the clock, I hear each ticking talk. And they whisper that I've lost the race, but I won't fucking stop. You know I need you here tonight. Because if we're gonna lose this thing, we're going out in style.
This is kind of a neat thing. Sebastian Bach from Skid Row has been friends with Axl Rose for fucking ever. And he would talk about how Axl Rose was already working on November Rain many years before it ever came out. You know, like the mid-80s, he was working on this shit, plinking around with it on a piano. And I got this thing of old Appetite for Destruction demos. So, when did that come out? 88? 87? So these demos are pretty old. And I think the only Use Your Illusion era songs on here are Back Off Bitch, if I remember right, or Don't Damn Me, one of those. And November Rain. So I'm not going to play the whole thing, because it's fucking 8 minutes long. I'll just play the nice little piano bit from the end. But this is his hyper-old November Rain. Back when, you know, fucking Appetite for Destruction was clearly a way more straightforward, rough and tumble fucking rock album than the Use Your Illusion saga, the epics. So I always think it's interesting that the most obvious example of the artistic excesses of Guns N' Roses, November Rain, was already a song back in these days. Axl, at least, if not everyone else, was already moving in this direction. So here's just the end of that song. Well, the rain has basically stopped, but that was actually worse for a bit there. Man, the fucking mosquitoes came out in force when I was still in the woods. They were going nuts, I guess, because since yesterday it's basically been raining mostly all the time, on and off. But between being stuck out in the woods and being rained out, they were going bonkers on me. It was like fucking insane. I couldn't keep my fucking sleeves down, just getting bit like, on your scalp through your hair. That doesn't happen all the fucking time. Anyway, I'm back on a main street now, heading back home. I was thinking I might wander a little further out today, but it's getting late, it's getting dark, it's getting humid, and I'm getting bit. I remember I applied for a job at a gas station way out here one time when I was a teenager. Thank fucking God I didn't get it. I mean, I've heard just from people that the guy that runs the place is a fucking douchebag throughout the years. But also, just what a waste of fucking time, man. I mean, if I have a kid, I'll talk him into getting a summer job, but fuck it, man, Jesus Christ, hourly rates for what? What a waste of time it would be, just like slaving away at some shitty gas station job for, I don't know what the fucking minimum wage was back then, but not much. The minimum wage here just went up to $8 an hour. When I was a projectionist in Vancouver, I was only getting $8.50 an hour. And I mean, I needed a job because I was living in a far off place, and I liked that job anyway, but it's just weird to think that, you know, I like the minimum wage was always higher out in Vancouver. $8 an hour seemed like a lot coming from here, where it's like $5.50 or $6 or something. But you just wait a little while and it just, whatever, levels out. I could be working anywhere. I could be working at the dumbest job in the world here in Fredericton and get paid the same as I was, basically the same as I was getting paid out in Vancouver. And I don't know, inflation is going to be such a motherfucker that by the time I'm an old man, my money ain't gonna be worth shit anyway. That happened to Ayn Rand, the writer. Apparently inflation ate away at her money. She wasn't exactly fucking rolling in dough by the end of her life. So, I don't know. There's a lot of arguments for buying a house, I guess, and investing in your future that way, but a lot of this seems like a, you know, I'm not saying I'm better off, far from it, but since I don't want to slave away at a job anyway, there's some nice ways to justify it. So that's nice. You know, maybe if I do end up as a Walmart greeter when I'm an old man, the fucking minimum wage will be $25 an hour anyway. Maybe it won't be so fucking bad. So while we all contemplate our terrible fucking futures where if we did manage to find a mate and get married and be happy, they're probably dead by now. All your savings are for nothing. The world has fucking changed into a whacked out place that you hardly understand because everyone else is interfacing with the fucking internet hive mind and you don't know how to do that shit. You're shitting yourself, your fucking organs are failing, your meds are expensive, you're a Walmart greeter. Here's the Powerpuff Girls theme song. Here's a song I've been meaning to play forever, and I keep putting off for whatever reason. And this is my fucking Slush show, so why the fuck not throw it in? There's this Canadian band called Finger Eleven. There's a good chance you know of them, because they had this big single called The One Thing that was fucking terrible. Then they put out another album, had this other single called Paralyzer that was apparently huge, but I never fucking heard it until I deliberately looked it up. They played it, you know, on some late night show, and then they played it again 10 months later as a testament to its staying power. Apparently it was an even bigger hit than The One Thing. I don't know. I never fucking heard it, and it's not that goddamn good. It's like a weird disco tune. The hi-hat action. Anyway, their first album as Finger Eleven was called Tip, and it was excellent. The second one is when they were starting to lose me. Third one was The One Thing, blah, blah, blah. But before that, they were the same band under a different name. They were called the Rainbow Butt Monkeys. The bald guy wasn't bald, the lead singer. They had a song that was a pretty big hit in Canada called Circles. And they were a little more funk-oriented. And it was weird that they were called the Rainbow Butt Monkeys. I think changing their name to Finger Eleven was a good move, because their songs were, like, surprisingly serious given the name. Circles was, like, about your fucking friend dying in a car crash or some shit. And this was the first song off this album. It was called As Far As I Can Spit. And I always liked it. So here it is, some Canadiana, the hidden underbelly, the secret origins of Finger Eleven, the Rainbow Butt Monkeys.
We'll be right back.
Here's another song I've been hanging on to for a while. This is Deep Kick by the Red Hot Chili Peppers. I remember, at the very start, when I first met Ian, it seemed like we had a lot of differences. Differences that I was excited by. Toward the end, I mean, we're still friends, obviously. You know, she's coming to Montreal so we can hang out and bang and what have you. But I don't think the end is the wrong term to use. We had all kinds of differences that were not helping. We're not, you know, what either of us were looking for. But there was this nice period in the middle where we had all kinds of things in common that I never expected. Way, way more than I expected. Books, comics, music, sometimes, you know? A lot of times she's listening to crazy-ass avant-garde DFA Records dance shit that I had no fucking clue about. But I just remember when the Chili Peppers came up. One Hot Minute was kind of their album that nobody... It was kind of less critically respected because it was between Frusciante's stints in the band. It was when Dave Navarro was their guitarist. But it still sold a ton of copies, and it was still a really fucking good album. So it was just one of those nice little moments when it, you know, came up for whatever reason, and she's like, you know, I always fucking really liked that album. I don't know what everyone's big problem is with it. And I was like, that's what I think too. So here's a song from that album called Deep Kick that's about Anthony and Flea when they were kids. His autobiography, Scar Tissue, goes into a lot of the shit they mention in this song. It's a fucking cool-ass song, man. Get your funky groove on after the slow, quiet intro.
It started when we were little kids. Free spirits, but already tormented by our own hands. Given to us by our parents. We got together and wrote on desks and slept in laundry rooms near snowy mountains. And slip through whatever cracks we could find. Minds altered, we didn't falter. And portraying hysterical and tragic characters in a small-filled universe. We love the dirty city and the journeys away from it. We had not yet been or seen our friends, selves, chase tails round and round, downward spiral, leaving a trail of irretrievable vital life juice behind. Still, the brother's blood, comrades, partner, family curse was impenetrable. And we lived inside it, laughing with no clothes. And everything experimental till death was upon us. In our face, mortality. And lots of things seemed futile then. But love and music can save us. And did. While the giant gray monster grew more poisoned and volatile around us. Jaws clamping down and spewing ugly shit around. Nothing is the same. So we keep moving. We keep moving.
Oh,
All right, here's a weird one. This is a song I made at least 10 years ago, probably more than 10, probably almost 12 years ago now, a long time ago, I don't know. And see, there was this band called Harpoon Missile that had this really cool video called Malbosha. I don't know if the song will hold up as well on its own. The video is really what made it work. I was going to play it on one of my video ham radios, but the only place I could find it was on like a Canadian music video webpage that wouldn't work in the US where I was at the time. So, I don't know. I'll have to look it up next time I do a video episode of Ham Radio. Maybe throw it in. Assuming I can find it at all in any capacity. Anyway, I thought it was really cool and exciting and totally into it. And then their second single did chart higher and did do better, but it was just the worst. It was this fucking sappy love song. The fucking, baby, I'm gonna do what's right for you and the kids. Which was insane, because their first video was them, like, dressed up like fucking clowns terrorizing the shit out of some little kid while he was asleep. Like army clowns. It made no sense to just do the R&B song. None. It was fucking retarded. And then they totally dropped off the map altogether after that. But I was going through this phase in my musical experimentation where I wanted to make punk-style hip-hop songs. Really short, really dirty and messy, real fast. So this song, it's like a minute long. What the fuck is it even called? Beats me. I don't know. But I made it with this, like, fucked up noise that I got from a corrupted sound file or some shit. And I wasn't the best rapper in the world, as I'm still not. I go off the fucking beat a little bit here. But that's what it's about. It's about Harpoon Missile's song, Malbosha. How much it inspired me and how much their next song sucked a fucking male camel's dick. So I'll play my little song and then I'll play Harpoon Missile. The good song, not the shitty one.
Your first video, one of the best I ever heard. My friends paid attention cause that shit was absurd. Most hip hop can stay at the store cause it's fucking weak shit. It's not hardcore. Couple months passed and you didn't get played. I didn't see you and I forgot your name. But on TV today, I saw your face. I said, fuck yeah, back in the race. But your new video has a different sound. It's pussy ass shit and it's on the countdown. Did the right thing to get the radio singing your song. But this sounds all wrong, you're in the biz now. You can high roll and mingle, but how'd you fall off by a second single? How the fuck did you fall off by a second single? You're just a fucking radio jingle.
Like me. slightly. Nah, nigga, not even slightly. You better be prepared to fight me. Cause you's a low-down snake and shiesty. Your little mouse that thinks he's mighty. So come on, come on.
I just want to say that I love you, you know what I'm saying, baby? Two little girls, you know, run out to all them deadbeat dads. Now we do, girl.
Baby, you know how hard I try. You know. I try my best to make it. I've tried.
I remember now my little song was called Hardcore. I'm walking by Joe's Diner for anybody that saw my last little video ham radio. I'm almost home. Walk past the lumber yard. So here's another song where this slush pile is nice to just, you know, play songs that I kept avoiding playing. It's like, fuck it, just play it. Who cares? I'm just filling space. Not to say it's not a fucking exemplary song. But I don't even remember exactly how this came up. It's, Stabbing Westward. I just remember it came up enough times when me and Ian were talking about stuff. It's just like, hey, you remember that band type of thing? So, Wither, Blister, Burn, and Peel was my favorite album by them, but this was from Darkest Days. I listened through it because I hadn't heard it in forever. And this was the song that I decided was the best. Basically, Stabbing Westward's whole thing, more and more as they went on, was just to fucking whine and bitch. They were like a prototype for an emo band. They're more of an industrial sort of bent to their music, but it's just the guy, oh, I feel so bad, I don't know how to fucking handle it. He's really explicit about, like, I don't know where you end and I begin, and I don't know what to do without you. I have serious boundary issues and just a major identity crisis going on all the time. So this one's about how he misses waking up next to his ex-girlfriend. Wah, wah, wah. Stabbing Westward guy. But it's a pretty cool song.
I'm in
I would really like to see the fucking girl that song is written about. She better be the hottest fucking bitch in the entire world. The hottest. So hot your fucking dick shoots blood. Alright, I'm on the home stretch, almost home. This isn't necessarily the most absurdly long fucking show I've ever done, but it's pretty long. Maybe I'll squeeze out one more before I go out to Montreal, but this might do it. So, one last song before we go. A little fucking... They're fucking with me! Subliminally! Suicidal Tendencies. Right here on Ham Radio. Don't forget the suicidal. Don't forget the fucking... What the fuck do you call that? When you put a fucking handkerchief on your head. The do-rag? The fucking... The sweat mop? The fucking... The... There's a thing. There's a word. Wow! Suicidal. Right here.
Murder! 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 Mur